I promise to be concise and brief and try to make up for the lost time. This work we have done as a response to the four-year-long drought that we have experienced in California. 2016 yet is not a drought year for us, but we have not yet come out of the long drought that we experienced over the last 4 years. As a result of this work, Governor requested the state agencies to come up with numbers on what was the impact of this drought. And this work was initiated as a response to that drought, where the Department of Water Resources California approached us to do a statewide level evapotranspiration monitoring. So my name is George Paul, and I did this work with my colleagues at Formation Environmental, and we are down at Sacramento, California. So basically, we developed this California statewide long-term evapotranspiration data set to be used in various decision-making levels. Just one slide of introduction. I think there's a classical vintage approach that we have taken over the years, the crop coefficient based, which has provided a good results in the past, which is a field scale method which has been adopted by for irrigation scheduling at different field scale levels. But when it comes to developing a statewide water plan, I think we have to be very careful about the limitations of this crop coefficient based approach. So I've listed many of the limitations of this approach, but to highlight that there is no two fields which could be similar. Every field is different and has a lot of spatial variability and a lot of heterogeneity caused due to management practices and various other reasons. So there is no reason to assume a single crop coefficient for a field or for a same crop across different fields. So with that motivation, I think we have to move towards the satellite-based approaches for estimating actual evapotranspiration. So we were not predisposed to any algorithm when we started this work. We had with us all the three predominant, primarily the energy balance models that were used in this century, and that's listed over there. And again, there is a lot of approaches which is based on NDVI, which can directly, you can come to evapotranspiration, or there is approaches where you simplify the things and still say it as a surface energy balance algorithm, which is not like that. So this is the three listed one, the CBAL, SEBS, and the two-source model. And I'm not going to go into the details of these models, but I'll be trying to showcase more of the results rather than the methodology, because we have been hearing of the different methods, two-source, single-source, all those methods we have been hearing from morning. So I think it would be good for us to look into what kind of results it produces and what kind of information it produces on a statewide scale. So getting back on the selection of the models, so again, it's crucial, like what level of complexity we want, what level of information we require. So those are all scale dependent, and we again have a lot of information on the scale dependency, and we have heard a lot of things on that. So going back again, I think one of the requirements of the project was, since it's a state level regional scale, we have to have a method to automate it. So the first thing that we have to take out of this project was something which cannot be automated, has to be dropped. So the first one was the CBAL, which has the hot and cold pixel limitation, where user has to go into every satellite image and look into the hot and cold pixel, and there is no standardized method to select a hot and cold pixel. So I think with that, we moved to using SEBS and two-source model into our framework, which is being used. And this is our framework where we have, I'm not going to again into details, but that's the level of information that we can create. We used the Landsat images, and we did use the MODIS information also. And I'll touch on that, but this is the resolution at which you can see the field scale spatial variability of evapotranspiration. And zooming into a single area, you can see how the evapotranspiration changes. So we used all the Landsat images available in California, as well as we used the MODIS products also. So it comes to around 23 scenes that covers the Landsat, and over the years, it's a huge amount of data set, like 75 terabytes of data that's sitting in our server. And the beautiful thing about California is we have CMIS stations across the state, which gives us very good weather information. So there is no secret sauce. We need a good weather information to run all these models. So there could be alternatives where you can use different approaches to come up with air temperature or other parameters. But I think this is the key thing. If you put in good information, you get good information out of the model. So we have a good weather station coverage across California, and we could develop a good weather information which goes into the whole model. This is just one of the validations that we conducted, and this is the one of the long-term data that we had of eddy covariance. That's a two-year eddy covariance data from a rice field, and again collected by the Department of Water Resources, and also there's a study with the UC Davis. So we see a good performance of the model for the 2 years time period. So with that, I'm going into more into comparing with different scales our statewide results. So this is a classical case of how a crop coefficient approach compares with a surface energy balance based approach. Calcimeter is a crop coefficient based approach, and we have selected just a small region in California. There's a Madera County and the different crop classes over there. I'm going to show you how it compares for almond, 650 almond fields in that county. So those are the 650 almond fields. The red bars are the SEBs in the top chart, and the blue bars are the crop coefficient-based calcimeter methods, actual evapotranspiration, or we should say crop ET. And we see there is a big difference over there. And the bottom graph is where we compare the best field in that county with our result. And there we can see that matches well. So if you take all the 650 field and average out and compare with our result, it does not match because there's a huge variability that you can see in this, just to show you how spatially heterogeneous and variable these fields could be. These are all almond field. One is a very well-managed, good field, and the other on the bottom right is a crappy field of almond. And there is intermediate field where you can have a new orchard coming in, or you can have something going on in that field. So if you draw a CDF of this information, you can see almost 50% of them do lie within the water requirement of almond, but there's at least 50% of the fields are there which are badly managed or something wrong is going in. Again, an example of statewide where you can look at the bar there, how much reduction has happened in the actual evapotranspiration as the drought proceeds. And if you plot it as bins of water required over the acreage, we can see that the lowest bin, that would be something which would be interesting, the zero bin, and that's increasing as drought is progressing. So almost 500,000 acres were fallowed as a result of drought in whole of California. This is again a different way to see, look into this thing. The pink regions are where the land has went and undergone fallowing. You can see in 2010 the acreage, and in 2014 the acreage has gone up to 600,000 acres. A quick view of how farmers has transitioned through this drought is, you can see alfalfa cropping system moving into a new orchard, and you can see how the evapotranspiration across the state, across that region is changing. And this is one of the worst hit counties in California. This is mostly orchards and almond and pistachio, high intensive tree cropped region, and there you can see as drought is progressing from 2010 to 2014 and 2015, all those dark regions are where land has been fallowed. And there's one of the ways to quantify is to just see the lower bar of water usage, and that you can see it's exceeding the zero bar. That's the zero ET, 0 to 0.5 ET. So that means literally no crop is being grown in that bar. And again, translating it into acreage, you can see over there around I think around 500,000 some acres were, or around 25% of the acreage has gone out of production. So this is again an interesting thing that came out of this study was the rice acreage. So rice is in the Northern California where we have a lot of water, and the result of the overall study you can see over there, 2011 was a good water year, 2012 was driven by commodity prices, rice plantation increased, and 2013 was again farmers were encouraged to plant more rice, but 2014 was when the water transfers happened, so there was the water prices went up to $500 per acre feet, so farmers were encouraged to sell their water rather than crop the field. So you can see over here the reduction happening, and this is not a result of drought, but a forceful thing where farmers are like happy to release their water and rather than cropping their fields. So again, translating again into a different bar where you can see how much acreage or how much decrease, 25% to 30% decrease has happened over the period of time as drought progressed. So a beautiful thing about this data set is you can look into a field and you can still see how this field has performed over the years. This is again at a bigger scale. There's an Imperial Irrigation District, and here you can see the green line is the LACRAS data, that's Lower Colorado River Accounting System, and they have released their 2011 data just recently, just a few months back. That's the kind of delay you get from state agencies. So we our data says starting from 2010, we can compare for 2 years, we can see that our trends are so beautifully matching with the information that is coming from LACRAS. And the reason for the bias is very obvious. The green line is based on crop coefficient based approach where you go and map the crops in the whole irrigation district, use a crop coefficient and come up with the numbers. The down red line is the energy-based approach where you have a spatially variable actual evapotranspiration estimates. Again, some example on field scale. This is again an Imperial Irrigation District where a lot of information goes into decision making on fallowing, and you can see from these graphs how each field can be identified, whether it has been fallowed or something was going on, and the water use of each field can be seen in these graphs. So this is again an exciting thing came out of this study was when the Forest Department looked into this information, and they found that the lower end of the Sierra Nevada, where a lot of tree mortality has happened as the drought has progressed, and our ET data clearly shows that there is something wrong or something crazy going in that lower part of the Sierra Nevada, and that's the reduction in the ET as a result of tree mortality. And something again beautiful thing coming out of this information is the increase in ET in some of the upper regions because there is no snow, longer growing periods, and the trees are tapping the groundwater and growing more vigorously at the upper Sierra Nevada. So we see those kind of dynamics in the water use when you look at this scale. With that, I'll stop here and maybe take questions. Yes. Yeah. It's amazing. It's nice.
I have one quick question. Have you had a chance to compare your estimates against a water balance from either the Imperial Valley or in the Central Valley, maybe combining with race data to deal with the groundwater depletion?
I don't know how to answer that, but probably water balance, we did compare with Calcimeter, it's a water balance approach. So you mentioned about the Graze data, right? No, we haven't looked into the Graze data and tried to compare with the Graze data. Probably that could be one thing we could try to do. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.